Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WESCO Support Technical Exchange conference call. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Kathy Kien. Ma'am, please proceed.
Welcome, everyone, to this WESCO Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Understanding Transaction Manager and WESCO Application Server. The presenters are Kumar Nathan and Krishna Jaladi. Kumar and Krishna have more than 15 years of WESCO application server, customer support, and testing experience. They have experience in multiple versions from version 4 to version 8.5.5. Kumar's areas of specialization include integrated solution console, install, application manager, system management, transaction, WLM, J2C, and HA manager. Krishna's areas of specializations include JPA, EJB, WLM, HA manager, web service, J2C, web container, Dynacache, transaction, HTTP sessions, and IBM SDK. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Kumar.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for the brief introduction. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining today's session, Understanding Transaction Manager in WESCO Application Server. So let's move on to the next slide, Kathy. So we are on slide 2. So what we are going to discuss today? Today we are here to discuss what is transaction service, the overview of transaction. And we would like to also show the transaction logs, the logs that's used during the transaction. And we would also like to discuss some transaction timeout because we do get a lot of PMRs in this area, so we thought it would be better to discuss the difference between the transaction timeouts. And we would also like to discuss about the transaction manager high availability, how the transaction manager can be highly available in WESCO application server. And later, we'll be discussing common issues and troubleshooting. There are like a lot of repeated PMRs or the issues that we see in IBM support. And Krishna will be covering those common issues and troubleshooting. And we'll be covering the transaction recovery, transaction timeout. And later in the slide at the end, we'll be discussing how we can debug the transaction timeout without opening a PMR. And how you can use a tool called the TRA, Request Analyzer tool, to diagnose this problem. Okay, let's move on to the next slide, slide 3. Transaction overview. Slide 4, please. So introduction to transaction. What is transaction? It's in common, like a J2E transaction, right? So it's a group unit of work that should be atomic. Either everything should commit or everything should roll back. It should not be like partially committed or rolled back. For example, a good example is a banking transaction, right? You take a money out of a bank account, and we need to make sure the money has been credited into any other account. If something happens after you take the money out of the account, then it's no good, right? Like it will be in limbo. That we call it as an in-flight or in-doubt transaction. So that should never happen in the transaction. So everything should happen, either all or nothing. So in the WESCO application server uses a transaction manager, which takes the responsibility to manage all these transactions across their resource managers. So the resource managers can be your relational database, or it can be a JMS messaging engine, or it can be any EIS, Enterprise Information Service Systems. There are two types of transactions when we discuss about transaction, right? One is a local transaction, other one is global transaction. If just one resource manager is involved in a transaction, that we call it as a local transaction. If there are multiple resource managers, for example, if there are like a two database involved, or if there is more like a JMS server or all involved in a transaction, we call that as a global transaction. Let's move on to next slide, slide 5. I would like to make sure everyone understands the global transaction. So what is a global transaction? So we call it a global transaction or two-phase transaction. You may hear someone like a HA, a XA transaction, or it can be a transaction, right? So as I explained earlier, like if there are more than one resource manager involved in a transaction, that transaction is a global transaction. So there are two things happens in the global transaction, two phase. So it's a phase one and phase two. The phase one is prepare. So the prepare, what it does, like if there are three resource manager involved, right, for example, three database involved in a transaction, all the database will let the transaction manager know, okay, I have completed the task given to me, and now you can either commit or roll back. Like that, all the database, like three database, will let the transaction manager, which is running an SQL application server, know. So once all the information gathered by the transaction manager, that's a phase is called prepare. It prepares the transaction, right? Once it gets all the information from all the transaction, all the resource manager, then the transaction manager will either commit or roll back. That is your phase two. So anything happened between this prepare and commit, we call it as in-doubt or in-flight transaction. So if anything happens to the transaction will be rolled back. If all the resource manager says we are good to commit, then the transaction manager will commit the transaction. Let's move on to the next slide, slide six. Okay, transaction log. So transactions are very sensitive. So we need to make sure the transaction either commit or roll back. So those information needs to be stored somewhere and persist somewhere. So we'll discuss about that log. Let's move on to slide seven. Okay, so SPR application server transaction service, it writes the information to the persistent file called a transaction log file for every global transaction involved with more two or more resources. So there are two logs we need to remember. One is the TRAN log, one is the partner log. Those two logs are involved in the transaction, so those information are stored in the TRAN log and partner log. In TRAN log, it holds the record detail of the transaction. Usually you can find these logs under WebSphere app server profile name directory. There is a folder called TRAN log folder. If you navigate inside that, these are stored by default, actually. But in later slides, we'll be discussing where that should be stored for highly availability. So the TRAN log stores the records of the transaction, and the partner log stores the information about the resource. For example, it stores the database name, it stores the database where it stores the host name, the user ID, password. All the information are stored in the partner log. So those two files are very important. So sometimes if anything happens to the transaction, the server may fail to start. Do not delete this folder unless otherwise you really don't care about the transaction that has been pending. So other than that, do not delete the logs just to bring up your server. Let's move on to next slide, slide eight. Transaction logs. So the transaction log prior to version 8.5.5.7, you can store only in a disk. From 8.5.5.7 onwards, we kind of introduced a new feature to store the transaction log in database as well. I have provided a link here, the URL, which has a very good information how you can configure to use the transaction logs in the database. Okay, let's move on to next slide, slide nine. So transaction log. So when we talk about the transaction log in a disk, right, so we recommend to have the transaction logs to be stored in an NFS location, like in a network attached storage, NAS, like the NFS v4 or NFS v3. NFS v4 is recommended because it does better suited for automatic peer recovery. I'll be discussing more about the peer recovery in the later slides. And NFS 4, it does have a feature of file locking mechanism, which can lease-based exclusive locking protocol mechanism, so which can release the locks, actually. But NFS v3, you may have to manually implement, and there are a few more configuration needs to be done for NFS v3. So we do recommend having used the NFS v4 for a transaction manager. So it is also not recommended to store transaction files in a shared file system like a Windows map drive because that can cause a lot of issues because all the servers running in the WebSphere application server in a cluster should be able to read and write the information in the network attached storage in the network. Let's move on to next slide, slide 10. So it's very important to know about the transaction timeout. What are the transaction timeouts available in a Sphere application server? Let's move on to next slide, slide 11. So the two things I really want to make sure people really understand the difference. The transaction timeout, you can set it in your application using the transaction API, like a transaction.set transaction timeout. You can set the value. That will override all the values what you set in this panel. Or you can set the transaction timeout under application server, your application server name, and transaction service. If you click on that, it will give you this panel where you can set your transaction timeout value. So the total transaction timeout value is if any transaction started or initiated within the server, inside that server, that transaction will honor this value, this 120 seconds. So what it does, if the transaction is running more than 120 seconds, that transaction will be marked for the rollback. It's not going to roll back immediately after the transaction timeout happens, but it does mark the transaction for rollback. Once all the resource manager comes back and say, okay, I'm done, then once it gets all the information, the resource transaction manager, then it will take the action at the end to roll back once the timeout happens. So the another timeout value is the maximum transaction timeout, which is the transactions are imported. The transaction context can be imported from the different servers. So for example, if the transaction running on server 1 is imported now onto server 2, so that transaction will be timeout based on your maximum transaction timeout value. So the difference is if the transaction initiator started on the same server, that will be done by your total transaction timeout. If the transactions are imported from the different server or any overall transaction, that will be taken care of by your transaction maximum transaction timeout value. So one more thing I would like to mention here is the enable file locking. If you ever planning to use NFS V3, you must disable this, the enable file locking, for the disadvantage we described before. And there are some tech notes also available. Probably I think I do have that later in the slide, which explains more about it. Or Krishna may be posting that also, some of the links in the chat window there, so you can read more about it. But if you are planning to use NFS 3 for any reason, you must disable the file locking here. But if you do it, there is no data integrity because all the servers maybe try to access the same log at the same time. You have to have some external resource to restrict that. Let's move on to the next slide, slide 12. So when we talk about the timeout value, I would like to mention about the sync query timeout with transaction timeout. So I thought it makes sense to talk about the WebSphere default query timeout also here. So what it does, the WebSphere default query timeout, if you want to timeout a query after some time, like then the query, if you are executing a query, right, then it will be running forever. That can be hang, or can be, if your database is not responding, that will be running forever. So if you don't want that to happen, you can set the WebSphere default query timeout. And if you set that to 60 seconds, for example, right, so the query will be timing out after 60 seconds. So this default value, the whatever value, the WebSphere default query timeout value, that can be overridden during the transaction time using the custom property sync query timeout with transaction timeout. So it's a Boolean property. You can set true or false for sync query timeout with the transaction timeout value. So what it does, by default, the query timeout value will be computed immediately before executing each and every statement. So I have a few examples in the next slide. Let's move on to the next slide, slide 13. So slide 13, so let's just take two scenarios here. One, the WebSphere default query timeout set to 20 seconds, and with sync query timeout with transaction timeout set to true. So as you can see here, the first connection.create statement, it uses the 20 seconds as we've given in the WebSphere default query timeout. The query takes 20 seconds. The second query also takes 20 seconds because that's a default query timeout value. And after that, you are beginning your transaction, right? Before that, you are setting, as I said earlier, you can set your own transaction timeout value in the application using set transaction timeout. If you don't set it here, by default, it's going to be 120 seconds that will be used here. In this case, but let's assume 30 seconds is used in this transaction. So you are starting a transaction, transaction.begin. So the first query inside the transaction is going to use the 30 seconds because that's where the transaction is beginning. The first query is executing, right? So once that is, if it is taking 5 minutes, for example, after 5 minutes, you are starting the next transaction, the next query inside the transaction. So what it does, it computes the previous one. So it minus the 5 seconds that used in the previous query. Then it will use the remaining 25 seconds that is given for your transaction timeout. So like that, for every query that you're executing, it's going to compute the time every time before it executes the query. So once you commit, or once it comes out of the transaction boundary, then it will again start using the WebSphere default query timeout value, the 20 seconds. So let's move on to next slide, slide 14. So transaction manager highly availability. So as I explained earlier, so transaction manager or transaction service is very sensitive not just in WebSphere application server or any JTUE servers, right? The transactions are very sensitive. So it should be either everything should complete or everything should roll back. So in order for that to happen immediately, we have a feature called Highly Availability in WebSphere Application Server, which is the HA Manager feature, which can take care of your transaction manager. If anything goes down or anything goes wrong, the transaction can be started in other servers. So we are going to discuss about this in later slides. So let's go on to next slide, slide 15. So transaction manager highly availability, like high availability. So the highly availability, the HA manager, which is in WebSphere application server, the feature that's in WebSphere application server will take care of this highly availability of transaction manager. So suppose if you have a four cluster, if you have one cluster and flow four cluster member running in the cluster, right? So everything running fine, you don't have to worry about availability because all four up and running, everything is good. So for some reason, if server one failed, crashed, hanged, something happened to the server, so the transaction running on the server needs to be recovered because everything on the transaction is gone now because it crashed the server or something happened to the server. So, excuse me, in order for that to happen, in order for you to recover the transaction which was pending or on that server one server, what you can do is in the previous, before we had the HA manager, you have to manually go and start the server. When you manually go back and start the application server, failed server, it will try to recover the pending transaction, and then it will either try to commit or it will try to go roll back based on what it had before. But with the highly availability manager, you don't have to do it. The HA manager knows the server went down immediately on the fly using the heartbeat that it sends the signal every 30 seconds to the peer servers, which is running in a cluster, and it can mark the server as down, and it can start and initiate the peer recovery process in next cluster member, next available cluster member. Let's move on to slide 16, peer recovery. The recovery that we just talked about, that's nothing but a peer recovery. It means the peer server, the peer cluster member running in the cluster will take care of the recovery, will take care of the transaction which has been pending or has been crashed in a server one server in the given example, right? So there are two ways the transaction can be recovered. One is in a peer recovery mode. One automated way, which I just explained, the HA manager knows the server is down and it will initiate the peer recovery process in the next available server. That is the automated peer recovery. That's by default. You have to fine-tune few things, which I have it in next slide, what you need to do in order for you to make sure the automatic recovery process works for you. Now, other thing is the manual peer recovery. In the manual peer recovery, if the transaction failed, you have to go to the console, to the runtime transaction, and then you say, okay, I want to recover that transaction right now. This is suited for some of the stack products that we have, most of the customers I've seen will use the automated peer recovery. Let's move on to next slide, slide 17. So this is what you need to do if you are planning to do automated peer recovery. If you want to do that, you must configure your transaction manager to do this. There are two things you need to do. You have to go to the cluster members and then click on the member name under the clusters. So there is an option called Enable Failover of Transaction Log Recovery. By default, it's unchecked, actually. Even when you create a cluster, by default, this option is unchecked. If you want to use the highly availability transaction manager, then you must enable this and then restart the server. And this is step one. And step two is you must provide your log directory, which is, I explained, like a trend log or partner log, the transaction logs, right? It should be in a highly available system. It should be in a network attached NAS or NFS v4, I recommended, or NFS v3. It must be stored in somewhere in NFS, or from 8557 onwards, you can store the transaction logs in the relational database as well. And if that is the case, then you provide the schema information here. And if it is going to be your NFS, then you will be providing the network storage location over here. So make sure when you do that, all the cluster members in the cluster can read and write all the logs in the network attached storage. So I have provided two URLs, to more information about how you can configure manual peer recovery and how you can configure the automated peer recovery. If you have not done anything, so new configuration, if you never did any manual peer recovery before, you just follow these two steps, right? You just do these two, you are good to go. But if you have already done manual recovery, because there are HA policies where you have to set to static because the HR manager works based on the policy. If that is set to static, it means you are manually going to trigger the PR recovery configuration. Let's move on to the next slide, slide 18. So here I just came up with a small example, like a small scenario. We talked about it here, but this is just a sample scenario how that works here. So if you can see in the left-hand side is a global transaction is running on two servers, and the two servers are happy, and it acquired the lock in the database also. It's doing some transaction update into the database, and everyone fine, everyone happy, right? So in case of server one failure, it's out of picture now. It's out of network, and the server crashed or failed. Something happened to the server, and the transaction is still writing or something written into your transaction log for server one server, and also the log has been acquired by the server one server in the database as well. So all the in-flight transaction needs to be taken care of by someone. And as I explained earlier, so there is two ways you can recover. Either you can restart the server, but unfortunately, in case of NFS v3, that's why I'm repeating again and again, if you have NFS v3, you need to reboot the entire system, the machine that's running the server one server. But if you have NFS v4, it uses the least-based exclusive locking protocol mechanism, so it can release the locks, and then the transaction can run on the different server. For example, you just have two servers here, right? So the transaction peer recovery can run on the server two server, and which can take care of the pending transaction. Let's go on to next slide, slide 19. So that's what it does, actually. At the end, the server failed, out of picture, remove it from the transaction, remove it from the cluster, right, at the moment. And then the transaction which was running on the server one now moved to your the server two server. I mean, the recovery process is moved to the server two server along with the transaction service running on server two server. So it can now, since it's a highly available file system, so the server two server can read the logs from the server one transaction log, and then it can complete the pending transaction. It can either do rollback or commit. And also with the HA based support, the lock that's acquired in the database also will be released, and the server two server can happily read the pending transaction from the log, and it can complete the transaction with the database. So this is the overall picture how the transaction manager works in the highly availability with the peer recovery process. With that, let's move on to next slide, slide 20. Yeah, this is the common issues and troubleshooting. From here on, I will hand it over to Krishna Jaladi.
Thank you, Kumran. Good morning, all. That was a good information presented by Kumran on some of the transactional high availability and then transaction logs, and then some of the transaction, global transaction, and then 1PC. Transaction information. So with that information, let's move on to some of the common issues and then how to troubleshoot common issues that we encounter in day-to-day business when particularly running applications that involves in transactions. Let's move on to slide 21. So here we try to come up with a few exception messages and the stacks that are we often more see PMRs in terms of PMRs, how to resolve those issues. We particularly want to concentrate on those issues where we were getting a high number of PMR counts. So the idea is to provide some detailed information about these commonly seen issues so that you can do self-help and then recover from these exceptions as soon as possible. So the most common exceptions we see is WTRN 0062E and then WTRN 0063E messages. Basically, 0062E message is straightforward. It is telling you really the meaningful information that the transaction manager encountered multiple resources that have one PC capable in a global transaction. That is not allowed, but WebSphere application server does allow there can be one PC capable resource that can be participated in a global transaction. meaning a 1PC resource that can be involved in a 2PC resources, that only one such 1PC resource is allowed with LPS support, something which we call as last participant support. Okay, this message is straightforward. It's telling that, okay, in a global transaction, there is already 1PC resource that is enlisted in the global transaction. Now, you are trying to enlist a duplicate 1PC additional resource into the global transaction that is not allowed. Some of the common issues we see is when you configure the resources, it can be a JMS or a JDBC resources. Basically, when you create those resources, you usually the common mistake we had seen is by selecting a single 1PC capable resource instead of Excel resource. Either selecting all the resources to a XA will resolve the issue, but there can be a situation where you have to have one PC resource that can be configured, right? In that case, application server does allow you to configure one PC resource with LPS support. And there is another scenario when this exception occurs. If you have configured a JDBC with an unshared connection pool, that means an unshared connection with one resource, if you have already enlisted one unmanaged connection, unshared connection into an XA transaction, and then if you have a scenario where you are trying to enlist a second unshared connection within the same global transaction, in that scenario also you can see 62E message. So theoretically the solution is either you configure LPS. If you have configured LPS, make sure that the application is compatible to use unshared connection pool. If you use unshared connection pool, if you are encountering this, then that means that your application is not compatible to use unshared connection pool. The only solution at this point is either change the main resource to XA capable to avoid this 62E message. And there is a tech note published, as I pointed out in the slide, that explains some of the common errors we see J2CA 0030E message involving when an connection manager trying to enlist in a global transaction. The tech note provides a detailed information how to solve and how to configure LPS support. You can visit that tech note whenever you have 0062E. That is the first place that we point out our customers to refer to that tech note to resolve the issue, right? And then second error message is 0063E. That means this message will be thrown by the transaction manager when you are trying to commit a XA or a global transaction. That means you are trying to commit a global transaction with an 1PC resource involved, right? And then it says it is not allowed. That means there can be only one LPS is available. Either the scenario is that you have not configured LPS support or you have not checked heuristic hazard checkbox in the transaction manager service, which Kumaran had showed us in the slide 11. There is a little checkbox which talks about heuristic hazard. You have to select that heuristic risk, and then you have to instruct applications transaction service that what in case if a transaction fails. That means basically when you try to commit a global transaction with one PC resource enlisted in a global transaction, what happens is a transaction manager basically will send an XA prepare call. Any transaction, like global transaction, if there are multiple backend resources are involved, a transaction manager will send an XA prepare call. That means before committing the resources, a transaction manager want to make sure the backend resources that are involved in a global transaction are aware there is a commit call is going to come from the front-end application server. So the prepare will be sent to the back-end resources. Once the application server transaction manager receives if the back-end resources are prepared for commit process, then transaction manager will send a commit signal to all the participants that are involved in the global transaction. At that point, what happens is the first transaction manager will commit a 1-1 PC resource first, and then it will try to commit 2 PC resources. So what happens if there is an exception happens during the 1-1 PC, right? So that means the 2 PC resources that are involved may not be really aware what exactly the outcome should be. Then it uses the heuristic hazard, and then the application transaction manager determines what should I do if a exception occurs during the commit process. What is the rules that are defined by the application to me? Because someone has to drive the transaction manager always. Either it can be a containers or it can be an applications that has to drive transaction manager, instruct what they have to do. Otherwise, transaction manager cannot make a self decision what to do in an error condition, right? So basically, if you define the heuristic hazard rules based on the outcome, it will take the decision whether to commit the transaction or roll back the transaction entirely. It depends on the outcome of the heuristic hazard calculations.
Okay.
Let's move on to slide 22. Okay, transaction recovery issues. Let's move on to slide 23. Transaction recovery issues. So this is one of the most common issues we see. There can be a situation where application server have to recover your transaction, whether depending upon whether you configure transactional high availability. Those transactions will be recovered by the peer application server. That is the most recommended approach, so that if you have a scenario where your business don't have to wait for an application server to start and recover, if there is a transactions are very important, and then if your business flow cannot wait for on a single application server going out from a distributed transaction environment. So if it is a normal JVM failure, then administrator, depending upon your configuration, like whether node agent can restart application server automatically or an administrator can restart application server quickly, they notice the server going down. Such as like JVM crash or hang, where they have to recover. But what if an hardware failure, right? Now that means that transaction will stay for in doubt. If the business requirement is that the transaction needs to be cannot wait that long, right? So in that case, the transactional high availability recovery will come into aid, because your peer application server can acquire the lock on the tran log for the system that is down, and then it can recover the transaction very quickly. But there are situations where if you are not using transactional high availability for a transaction service recovery, then when you start the JVM again, during the startup, the transaction manager will try to recover the in-doubt transaction, because each transaction, global transaction information will be returned to the tran log and the partner log. Basically, the partner log contain the information about the resources that are involved with the global transaction, and the transaction log has the information about the transaction and the state of the transaction, right? So the transaction manager will use that information from the tran log and partner log, and then it will try to recover those transactions during the server startup. So there are various messages out during the server startup, which categorized from WTRN0132I message to WTRN0151I message. These are the most of the messages that are involved with the XA resources. And then I had given the info center link, which explains about each message, what that message means, and then what action needs to be taken, or if at all, if some action needs to be taken, or if the end user don't have to worry about a message that is explained in the InfoCenter URL I had provided. Let's see some of the messages, how they appear, how they look in next slide. Can we move to slide 24? Yeah. So basically, I had highlighted in here one additional message, 0028i, which is not involving in XA. It can be a 1PC. If you have a 1PC resource that needs to be recovered, and then which is outed by 28i message. And then from 132i to 151i, you see a different messages involved, like application server will tell you how many resources it needs to recover and how many transactions it needs to recover. And then during the recovery stage, what messages you will see. The message itself is self-explanatory. If transaction needs to be committing, that means if you need some manual intervention, right, and then you can make a decision when you go to the transaction service runtime tab in the admin console. It allows you to recover certain transaction manually. So that means some manual intervention is required. So administrator can decide, depending upon the requirement, whether to commit or roll back. So a respective message will be returned to the transaction manager, indicating that whether the manual intervention is successful or not. Right, if it is rolling back, you will see a message, and then if it is ignoring a particular transaction, then you will see 139i messages. So similarly, these are the different types of messages you can see during the recovery and the manual intervention. And let's move on to next slide, 25. I have tried to come up with some of the good resources that were posted in our social media, such as blogs, and then in the form of the tech notes. These two are the three resources provides very good information that were written by my colleagues in support. So basically, the bottom line is that we always recommend you should not delete the transaction logs or the partner logs. This is the most common recommendation we make. If it is really a production system, you should never delete these logs unless if it is absolutely necessary and is instructed by transaction development within IBM. So we try to recover as many as transactions. And then if the log itself corrupts for various reasons, then we try to recover as many as we can. And then finally, if we say if there is nothing much we can recover from the existing logs, then at that point we will development will make a recommendation. But otherwise, we should not ever delete these TranLog and partner logs, for the reasons that were explained in these blogs. One such case is it can bring down your system into an inconsistent state that is really might impact your business. So that blogs will explain. And if you have any further questions after going through these blogs, you can post the comments to the blogs, and then we will review the comments, and then we'll try to answer in the blog itself. There is another tech note that I have pointed out last, especially with the Oracle database involved. You will have to set up some commands that needs to be run on the Oracle database side so that it allows the application servers to recover the transaction when involved with them Oracle XA resources. So let's move on to slide 26. So there is another case where a special case where you have to do certain steps because in the previous slide during explanation I told we never ever recommend customers to delete TranLog and partner logs. There is a good reason for it, right? So, and then similarly, what if if the backend resource is permanently moved or not available, right? And then if you know, the admins know that the backend resource is permanently gone, and then if that resource left an in-doubt transaction in the application server, then application server transaction manager will try to recover the transaction forever, and then it might not succeed, right? The messages about the recovering and then not succeeding can annoy, and then simply fill out the logs, right? Two, there is a way application server provides, there is a way to remove the partner log entries so that they can be safely deleted from the partner log and the transaction information from the TRAN log without how to delete the TRAN log and the partner logs. The, usually the message that is indicated by 00005W warning message, the message is very clear that it states that extra resource for a particular transaction participant could not be created because it's no more available, and then it also lists the resource information that is not available. So to remove those entries, there are certain steps that we need to follow. First, we for sure we need to enable a transaction equal to all trace. Once you enable the transaction all trace, start the server in normal mode, and then once the server is started, and then you can stop, and then take the TRAN log, and then you can search the TRAN log with the keyword called recovered equal to false, and then there will be a message, WTRN 0151I message, as I explained here, and then the entry, like, it lists a recovery ID, 2, and then immediately it says recovered is false. So that is the resource it is trying to recover, which is gone permanently. Right, so you can note down the recovery ID number from that highlighted message with the message recovered equal to false, and then let's move on to next slide 27. Okay, and then what happens is the application server provides a custom property, remove partner log entry. So basically, you can configure the remove partner log entry as a custom property in the transaction service as shown in the right side. And then you can get the recovery ID from the previous slide where the recovered flag is false. And then you can mention that recovery ID. And then if you have multiple resources that needs to be deleted permanently, that then you can enter them at the same time with a comma separated list. Right, like I had shown, like 2, 4, 6, for example, right? So basically, this property is introduced through an APAR, which was a very old APAR. But if you are on the latest 8.5 or 8.55, this property is already available. Only you can configure as pointed out in the Info Center URL at the bottom of the slide. Let's move on to slide 28. Once you set the custom property with the values, right? So this will be only effective if you run your application server in a recovery mode, okay? Once you set this property, go to the command line, like as shown, like start server, server name, and then there is a recovery mode flag, right? So if you run under the recovery mode, and then you will see messages that if there are any resources that cannot be recovered, and then if that resource matches with the recovery ID, those entries will be deleted from the partner logs, and then transaction information will be deleted from the TRAN logs. So this will be only effective when you run your server under recovery mode. What happens when you run your server under recovery mode? Basically, if there are any transaction that needs to be recovered, they will be recovered. And then if there are any resources that cannot be recovered, and then if the recovery ID matches, then a transaction service will delete those resource information permanently, and then the server will shut down after recovery process is complete. Then you can bring up the server in a normal mode, and then since this property has no meaning, if you run the server in a normal mode, then you can safely delete the custom property itself, and then save the configuration. And then when you restart the application server next time, and then those custom properties gone, right? This is the one interesting case, how to delete the partner log information when the resources are moved permanently, right? So let's move on to slide 29. So there is another big hitter is the transaction timeout, right? So there can be many reasons why a transaction timeout occurs. So let's see what those few scenarios that we thought we see commonly during our day-to-day business issues. Let's move on to slide 30. So the transaction timeout, so basically the transaction timeout is indicated by a message WTRN006W, right? So basically it tells at the end of the message, as shown here, a transaction is involved with an transaction ID is marked for rollback after a certain amount of time. Now, if you don't see the value, the default value is 120 seconds, that will be replaced in the triple X seconds that I had mentioned. You will see 120 seconds there, or if you have increased the transaction timeout, then you will see the actual timeout that is configured, right? So immediately with this message, and then transaction manager tries to provide a debug information with another message followed by WTRN006W message, which is WTRN0124I. Basically, what that message tells is, I am going to dump the stack of the thread when the transaction timeout occurred. So basically, that stack has information about what business method is executed, or what query is getting executed, or what resource or the what method is getting executed when the transaction timeout occurred. Let's move on to slide 31. So basically the symptoms that can cause transaction timeout is if you see excess hung thread messages and then recovery, hung thread recovery messages. So basically that indicates that for several or the various reasons, the threads took normal than time than expected. Like usually the application server, for every 10 minutes, if a thread takes more than 10 minutes, it will print a WSVR0605W message into the system out with a stack indicating that that thread took so much time to finish, still it's in use, right? Once that thread is recovered, then a 606W message will be indicated saying that the previously reported thread that was appeared as a hung is recovered now. And it also puts the thread, how much time it took. So you can use that information and see on the hung thread stack information and see what is causing. Is that thread involved in a transaction timeout? If yes, then probably you can focus and see what activity is being done based on the stack, right? There can be a situation where you have a search queries, a database long-running queries, right, which never return. There can be a situation where your query takes forever. Maybe whatever, maybe some issues with the network layer or some issues with the JDBC driver or some resource issues at the database server itself puts the socket read permanently in the stack, right? If you see socket read zero when executing a query, there can be many reasons. It can be a query can be returned very quickly, maybe because of there is some issue at the network layer, JDBC driver cannot read the data. In those cases, you will have to enable JDBC driver trace and then resource adapter trace, connection manager trace along with the transaction manager trace. We'll see in the coming slides how to debug those issues, right? There can be another situation we commonly see is a long-running garbage collection activity that can also cause your transaction being timeout, because when a garbage collection runs, it stops all the threads that are running within the JVM, right? If it is a long-running garbage collection, then when the application thread has the application time from the JVM, and then by the time the timer is expired, then that particular transaction will be marked for rollback. That is the one situation. And then there is a resource contention on the application server or the backend, whatsoever reason, that can also cause the transaction timeout. So let's move on to slide 32. So when transaction timeout occurs, how to debug those messages? Basically, system out contains only 006W message, and then followed by another message I discussed in the previous slide, which prints out the stack trace when the transaction timeout occurred with the message 01124I. So basically, if you see that business method or a query that is executing at the time, depending upon the application stack, right, if you think that can take longer time, then that will make life easy to debug and then determine the root cause to resolve the issue. But it is not necessary that always that particular method is taking all the time. Basically, that can be the method that is executed when the transaction service dumped the stack. That means there can be another business methods involved in the transaction flow that could take longer time, but unfortunately those may be disappeared by the time a transaction service manager encounters the transaction timeout and dumps the stack, right? So if that method, if you see the method that is seen in the message, if it is not taking longer time, then that means there can be some other business method or the query is taking long time. Then at that time, definitely we need transaction equal to all trace to see how much time is being spent in executing the business methods, right? So usually most common issues that we encounter in day-to-day, we see we require J2C, RRA, and sometimes the EJB container trace, particularly if your transaction involves with the EJBs, right? So basically, when a transaction timeout message occurs, it prints an XID, the long format that I had shown here with the timeout, right? And there is a thread I highlighted in this case, 0000 hexadecimal, and which ends with 11 number with a red one. So basically the reason why I pointed out that, and then the next, if you see the search for XID on a thread, right? So there is a little information here. When a transaction is created, a global transaction is created by the transaction service, it will also create a alarm thread to track that transaction on a separate thread. That alarm thread will run periodically to track a particular global transaction, right? If that transaction exceeded the transaction timeout, that alarm thread will mark that transaction for the rollback. And then you will see when the transaction timeout happens, and then you will see on a different thread. That means the thread that is monitoring a particular transaction will be an alarm thread that is providing us the XID information about a transaction. So when you have the trace enabled and then reproduce the problem, you can simply go into the system out log and then go to the last occurrence of the 006W message and take that XID that I highlighted in blue color, and then search, scan through the all trace files. And then you will see the one trace file which has this XID, right? If you open that trace file and go to the entry, you will see something like XID impl exit. That means when the transaction service creates the XID, it prints that hexadecimal format, right? So, but that hexadecimal format is unique to the application server. Then the length can be varied depending upon the number of resources involved, right? So that is proprietary to the application server. So use that XID and then find out the thread ID that created that XID, right? And then basically that 006B is the one which started that transaction. So basically if you search in the trace files with the message that I have highlighted here, you will see on the thread 6B transaction begin occurred with a transaction ID 165, right? So that is the beginning of your global transaction. Then you can take, and then you can go back to the time where a transaction has time out method on the 6B. Then if you see the activity in between those, and then you will see the delays where it has spent, or you can see a trace gap indicating that maybe a possible garbage collection is running at that time. During that time frame, if you see how much time is spent in the garbage collection, right? So then that tells. If it is only one or two occurrences, that is okay. But if this garbage collection is becoming too much, then that means there is something that needs to be investigated. It can be a leak or can be an overloaded system, right? Maybe some other JVM is failing. Maybe your affinity is failing where one JVM receiving all requests. Can be various reasons for the garbage collection, right? So I try to highlight some of the important messages that we can use to debug from the transaction trace. Let's move on to slide 33. Yep. Yeah. So basically, there is another tool that we day-to-day use. This is very really helpful tool like TRA, IBM Request Trace Analyzer, which provides a built-in mechanism. Like it can, you can analyze the method duration. You can also analyze the request response times for a particular method, and also you can analyze the trace gap, as I highlighted in the screen capture. It is a free tool that is available with either with ISA tools when you install, or you can also download from the developer works the tool. So you can use that tool. That is really a cool tool that we use to debug various problems. Let's see one how we can use it for transaction timeout issue. Let's go to slide 34. Okay, so when you have that transaction trace, right? So when you load the transaction trace, then basically the tool will allows you to select a analysis pattern. So there are some built-in analysis patterns within the tool. Some of the, as you see in the list, some of the issues that I can select for the transaction timeout, only, okay, I want to see EJB pre, which is involved in a transaction timeout, and then the transaction manager service, and then the another transaction manager commit times, right? So if I select those and then run the tool against the trace file that I loaded within the tool, let's move on to the slide 35. Then once the tool completes the analysis, it lists the all the threads that are taking the time that matches your threshold. Like in this case, you can see a 4F thread, which is a different thread than the one which I indicated in the previous slide, is taking almost like 236 seconds, right? So, and then you will see when that transaction has begun, and you will see the thread ID that the transaction has started, right? And then you will see when the transaction has completed, how much time it took, right? So if you see a transaction timeout in this case you will see, right, what happening here. During the complete, you will see the next to the before, you will see the transaction timeout triggers, and then what happened in the pre-invoke. So basically, if it comes to an EJB container transaction, so basically your container, EJB container is responsible for initiating your global transaction. And then enlist those global transaction with the service transaction service manager. So basically, what how it operates is there is a pre-invoke and the post-invoke. So any transactional activity will be pre-invoked or established during the pre-invoke, and then once the pre-invoke is completed, the business method will enter for the execution. Once the business method exits, meaning it completes its operation. The EJB container will again call the post-invoke. During the post-invoke, the EJB container will clean up the transaction depending upon the outcome. If it needs to commit or if it needs to roll back because of certain exceptions, the pre-invoke will take care of that. So it is a simple example of EJB container, but any container such as web container can also do the same thing. There will be like pre-invoke or the post-invoke when you invoke a service method. So basically, pre-invoke will establish all the transaction-related necessities that are required by the container, and the post-invoke will involve of the post-invocation of the business. Slide 36. Yep. So once you see the where the transaction has begun, and then you can pull the thread, but that particular thread, and then see what happening here, right? And you can directly see from the tool at that time if the transaction is rolling back from the screen captures, Or you can pull a single thread from the multiple trace file, and then TRA is capable of analyzing a pull thread, but you have to do cleanup because when you do a pull thread, if it has any indicating the multiple files, then some there's multiple file names and the line numbers, so you have to clean up and then merge the entire pull thread and then into a single trace file. And then you can, once you feed that single thread trace file to TRA, that can analyze the single thread based also. This is really a cool tool we use, and then it also provides various components. Let's move on to slide 37. So basically, we have also highlighted some of the important resources where you can learn how to debug the various transaction timeout issues and the troubleshooting the transaction timeout. And also there is another developer article from one of my colleagues posted how to interpret the application server trace files, and then also a link for the TRA tool that I have discussed, which gives you a complete education how to use that tool you can use to debug the issues. Let's move on to slide 38. Quick recap of the summary. Today we discussed transactions in application server, and then we also discussed with the transaction timeout, and then the transaction recovery process, and then highly available transaction manager. Those are all covered by Kumra Nathan, and then most common issues and the troubleshooting tips, and then the additional resources are covered by me, myself, Krishna Jaladi. With that, I'm passing the control back to Kathy.
Thank you, Kumar and Krishna, for a great presentation. Now it's time to move on to the question and answer session. Yeah, one question just popped up. It was from David.
This is Krishna. I can repeat. Transaction timeout. Why it needs to crash the entire server instead of a single transaction? If I get your question right on the chat, if a transaction timeout happens, why it is timing out a multiple transaction instead of a single transaction, right? So basically, you have a transaction timeout, which is a global variable that you can set at the transaction service. But whenever a global transaction is started, each global transaction will acquire that timeout. And then, as I said in my one of my present slide, a alarm thread will be created for each transaction. Okay, to monitor that global transaction. So it is possible that when application server, JVM, encounters a transaction timeout, multiple transactions can be rolled back. That means it clearly indicates either a GC, or it can be a load on the backend resources, or it can be a overloaded JVM, right? So that means your application server is not able to handle the load, or your backend is not able to handle the load, right? That is an indication of an issue. That's why you see multiple transactions rolling back at the same time.
Our first question will be coming from the line of Deva. Your line is open.
Okay. Yeah, hi. Basically, my question is, you know, we have a transaction that has a long, is doing the DB2 call, has a long delay. So why WAS server cannot just back up that DB2, cancel that DB2 transaction, back up the union work, and then continue to run the other application or transaction?
So as we said earlier, a transaction manager cannot make its own decision. Somebody have to drive, in this case, the transaction manager. Either depending upon your application design and the flow, it is the application or the container that must drive the transaction service, what action it needs to take. As I said, transaction manager or the transaction service in application server, it cannot make its own decision for the business. So it depends on the application flow and the scenario that the application is encountering. It is possible that it has to roll back multiple UOWs.
Okay. I have another question. Is there any command you can display the in-flight transaction?
Yeah. There are WS admin commands available. At the same time, when you navigate to the runtime tab of the transaction service, you will see if there are any transaction, there is a link. If you click the runtime tab, will show the in-flight transaction. And also it will show the transactions that are required a manual intervention. So it depends. If there are no in-out transaction, it may not display, but it will only display during the runtime. So these states are not persistable during the config tab. You can only see them runtime or through querying multiple times the wsadmin commands. There are certain wsadmin commands listed in the info center that will help you to frame. And also, I think recently I also seen some of the blogs that were posted that had wsadmin commands, how to list those in-out transactions.
Okay, thank you. I have a third question, then I'm done. And the third question is, we are running WAS on ZOS, so we're using the start test to start the server. So how, if I need to start a server with a recovery mode, is any MN console setting I can set to tell the server to start a recovery mode on the next recycle?
No, the recovery mode option is only available through command line. There is no admin console option is available.
Okay, thank you. That's it. That's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
There are no more questions in the group chat. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. Thank you, Kumar and Krishna, for presenting today. You did a great job. You all have a great day.